This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas, and you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October the 15th, 2015, episode 1278, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference and Trail Guard. Good morning, horse world.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us here on Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you stopping by. It is the NATRC day. Of course, we talk all things trail riding, and we have Alice here with us like we do the third Thursday of every month. Howdy, Alice.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good, terrific, and we have a lot to talk about on today's show. We have some things coming up. Did you see that I actually went on a trail ride? Did you witness the pictures?
I did witness the pictures. Everybody was saying, look, Glenn was on a horse.
I know.
That's incredible.
That's exactly right. That was incredible. It was a Disney horse, though, so I don't know if that counts because that's kind of almost animatronic. And pretty much they were.
Yeah.
You didn't really have to steer or anything. I just sat there. So now if I could have taken that horse home, I might trail ride more often. Because that
one, yeah, those horses, you know, they're really well trained.
Yes, they are. They're Disney horses. Of course, they're well trained. And
that's right.
And they've done that ride 1,000,000,000 times. But yeah, it was. I actually had fun. I will say I had fun. It was very wet and rainy there. We didn't do any obstacles. I will say that. So it wasn't an NATRC sanctioned ride.
That might have been. That might have been off program if they'd had to do an obstacle.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
actually, yeah. The puddles were the obstacles, and believe me, you could. It had just rained and rained and rained and rained, so there was like these big puddles and everything. And my horse did not want to go through the puddles, so we did have obstacles. I went through the trees at times, and trying to get myself from being knocked off the horse by all the trees he kept running me into. But other than that, there was really no obstacles, and it was not timed, so we were good.
There you go.
So now I have to do two more trail rides, and that's my allotment for the year. Then I'm done. Then I'll just stick to driving my horses.
So that'll be, what, three for this year, or have you been on one before?
I am a limit of three a year. That's my limit.
Glenn, if you do three in one year, you will have exceeded the grand total for your lifetime previous to this year.
Set a record. Yeah, Jamie wants me to ride when we go out, and then we have Monty Roberts Ranch, and those horses are going to be like Disney horses, so that'll be fine. But I still like carriages much better. I still like sitting behind them.
Yeah, but aren't carriages, I mean, I don't know, statistically, are carriages more dangerous than riding?
You know, I think the only reason they probably aren't statistically is there's a ton more riders than there are carriage drivers. Now, if there was an equal amount of both, yeah, carriages can be quite dangerous because when you fall out of the carriage, you risk the carriage hitting you in addition to the horse. So
that makes sense.
You got that problem. That's the reason I still wear a helmet when I drive is for that reason.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, you can get hung up in the carriage if it tips over, and then, you know, you got that extra added problem.
Well, when I lived in Kentucky and in Indiana, I lived close to DeLovely Farms, which is a big saddlebred farm, and they had a lot of driving horses, and one of my friends was a groom there, and he had told me a story about William Shatner getting hung up in his horse's carriage, but he wouldn't try to get out. He, like, was calling for people to come over and bail him out. Because I think they thought it was because it was William Shatner and he was over the top, but it may have been that he was stuck.
He does. He does do that. And I think he still has that farm in Kentucky there. Still dry. I think he does thinnerbreads, right? Or saddlebreds? Saddlebreds.
Yeah, saddlebreds.
Yeah, saddlebreds. That's right. Yeah, I think he still does that. Well, Jennifer, what is coming up on today's show?
Coming up on today's NATRC episode, we will learn all about the Lucy lamp from Empowered, which is a great way to shed light on just about anything. Next up, we'll get to know Jan Lear, who takes old tired trailers and builds new life into them. And pulling through the ranch gate at the end of the fun-filled show, Jim Sims, founder of Trail Guard. And I'm happy to say, happy Cheese Curd Day, everybody. And please enjoy responsibly.
For everybody in Canada and Wisconsin. Jennifer loves cheese curds.
Or with curds. You.
Have you ever even had a cheese curd down there in Texas?
No.
No, I didn't think so. I didn't think so. Well, we have some Daily Witties for everybody today. Well, my Daily Winnie goes to the Remus Horse Sanctuary in Essex, England. I wanted to mention them because they just had the world, believed to be the world's oldest equine, pass away over the weekend at the ripe old age of 50. It was a horse named Orchid, a thoroughbred Arabian cross. It was one of the senior residents at the sanctuary, and they tend to take in the older ones. Apparently, after she was no longer useful as a brood mare, she had endured years of abuse and neglect before being rescued by Remus, and they brought her in. They said she was enjoying her life at her new home and steadily improved, and ultimately she was able to overcome a recent bout with colic, but eventually she just died of old age. So we wanted to thank them for doing the work that they do, and we wanted to wish Godspeed to Orchid, the thoroughbred Arabian cross, who was yellow. I mean, very yellow color, very Palomino colored. So there you go. That's my Daily Winnie.
Well, I have a Daily Winnie also, and it goes to Becky Rogers, who is the owner of Marker Sellers, who's been our sponsor before, and she's a ride manager for NATRC. 2 weekends ago, she put on a ride in Wilburton, Oklahoma at Robbers Cave State Park, and all the proceeds from her ride go to benefit the Hugs Project, which sends care packages to overseas veterans, or not veterans, I'm sorry, overseas soldiers. And this year, she raised enough money to send over 100 care packages overseas to the soldiers. They send things like razors and chewing gum and mints, just, you know, things that are hard for the soldiers to get while they're overseas. And she works really hard on this ride every year. She puts, you know, there's a dinner to raise more money for the postage to send the packages. And in years past, we've actually brought the items and packed the boxes. But this year we just did a big donation. But, anyway, Becky Rogers is my Daily Winnie because of all the hard work she does with this Hugs Project.
Well, she deserves this. That's terrific. What great work. That's neat. Very, very cool. Well, we are coming into now the end of your season. Things will be wrapping up.
No, not for another month or so.
Okay.
The last ride of the season is usually the first full weekend of November. But, and then you have the board meeting usually the next week. And that's how it's happening this year. But this year, we also even have a ride the second weekend in November in Kansas. So there's not a big break this year. There's a ride that weekend. And then 3 weeks later, the week after Thanksgiving, there's a couple of different rides. And then we kind of get a break. But I think they're doing a ride in Arizona in January. So I don't know. The calendar just keeps getting expanding, you know. So well, I don't know that there's an official end, but I mean, as far as not having rides to go to, that doesn't happen much anymore.
And see, we're just starting all of our seasons down here in Florida. You know, our winter is now over, and everybody's going to be descending on Florida. We're all starting to ride again. So it's our time to actually. The temperature this morning outside was like 53. We were into the 50s. We actually had to wear a little bit of a jacket for the first time.
I think you were cooler than us.
Yeah,
this morning when I woke up, it wasn't that chilly. It was yesterday, but not today.
Yeah, we don't get that too often. It's been like 5 or 6 months since we had to be in the 50s. So it's nice, actually. It gives us our little bit of fall that we get down here.
Well, sure.
Now, you had an article here that you had found, and was this on a Natrack ride?
Well, the article, yes, at the ride that Becky managed 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
We had a problem with bees, and they've been riding at this park. This ride's been going on for over 30 years continuously, and from what everyone says, this has never happened before, that there's never been a problem with bees on this trail. And I know from riding in Illinois, ground bees are a problem, and they're territorial, so you just holler bees and everybody takes off and you outrun the bees and usually no harm, no foul. But in this case with, 30 some riders coming through, the bees got really annoyed. And a good friend of mine named Christine, who's a pretty new rider, and she had a junior rider with her. They got swarmed pretty badly. And the junior rider hopped off her horse and was trying to beat the bees off of her horse and trying to save my friend Christine from getting stung even worse. But the horses were so swarmed by bees, they both got away from the girls and were caught by two other riders who brought them back. But they were, and my friend Christine ended up shedding her jacket and just leaving it there because it was so covered in bees.
And this whole story's gross. Wow. African, the nasty bees?
I don't think so. I think they're probably just ground bees or just, your everyday bumblebee. I'm not really sure. I don't think anyone stayed around long enough to
find out,
them.
To ask.
Right.
Nobody asked them.
Right. Nobody asked the bees, right? But, I think that Christine counted that she had like 17 bee stings. And unfortunately, nobody was allergic as far as I know, but they did get Benadryl in them pretty quick. And everybody was okay. And the horses were fine too. And then one of the safety riders, her name was Brenda, went back and put caution tape along that whole area of trail and rerouted the trail around the area. But so we got there the next day, we see this area and we're all going really quietly around the bees area. But on Sunday, I didn't see any bees. I didn't have any trouble with them. There was a spot in the woods where another rider that was with me got stung. Each day somebody got stung, but it was in a different place. So I don't know. And I was front both times. And so I think when you have a group of people, it's the third, fourth beyond that tend to get stung because the first two or three people rile them up.
Right, right.
And then they get angry. And then, but anyway, at the meeting that night, they talked about what you should do. And they said the worst thing, the girls didn't know, but one of the worst things you can do is to stop and try to beat the bees off. The best thing you can do is to try to run away.
Okay, yeah, but who thinks in that moment? Everybody stops and tries to beat the bees off. That's just what you do, right?
Well, I would agree if I hadn't already ridden with a guide in Illinois, and because we got stung pretty bad 1 year in Illinois, we went camping and we'd hired a guide, and what he told us. He said, if you get into bees, whoever's getting stung, just yell bees, and we'll all take off. And so that was the only reason
we're all going to leave the person behind that's getting stung. We're out of here. You're out.
Well, no, the horses will run with them.
I know.
Them
because, I'm just kidding.
You.
I was just.
I know. And it could be that they were Africanized. Because this article I found, which was on infohorse.com, it's beesandhorses.asp, talked about, how the African bees will breed with pretty much any bee or they'll take over any hive. They don't care what type of bee you are, they'll move in. And they're saying, they've been confirmed in Utah, Louisiana, Arkansas, and Florida. And I know they have some in Texas.
But, oh, that's where that's where I remember them starting was Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they've been confirmed in Oklahoma, but it doesn't mean that they couldn't be in Oklahoma.
I know years ago, this is 25 years ago, there was this fear that they would just spread over the whole country and we would be swarmed with these African honeybees, and it would be it would be like the old Birds movie, only with bees. But that never quite happened the way they had predicted it was going to happen back then. you know, I had this happen when I was playing golf years and years ago. When I actually played golf, I was always very bad. That's why I quit playing golf. But we were on the one, we came in the one fairway, and I looked up, and this was a very tree-lined golf course. And I looked up, and I said to my partner I was playing golf with, I said, look at that cloud. That's a weird low-hanging cloud, and it's black. And then the cloud started moving, and the cloud came down and would go back up. And I said, that's not a cloud. That's a strange cloud I've ever seen, because it was a swarm of bees. It was a very large swarm of bees. And needless to say, we gave ourselves par, and we got the heck out of off of that fairway.
Yeah.
Because our route was through the bees, and it was like, okay, that's not happening. We're going around.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there was a situation in Arlington a year or two ago in the summertime where a lady boarded her horses. It was like in the backyard of somebody's property, kind of like where I've been keeping my horses until recently. And they had always kept their minis back there, and they were out messing with their horses one night, and they were attacked by bees. And they ran into the water to get away from the bees, but that didn't work. And that's one of the things this article says is don't go in the water, because the bees will just be waiting for you when you come up for air. And in that case, one of the minis ended up passing away from the bee stings. Typically, horses don't have trouble with bees, with the venom, because they're so big. But these were minis. And when they had a beekeeper come out to investigate, and they were in a shed, and it was like a 7-foot-tall beehive.
Oof.
And this is in the town where I live. I just moved. So, most of the time that doesn't happen though. This article says for safety to wear light colored clothing because they tend to attack darker things.
I heard that before too.
And that's probably one of the reasons I didn't get stung, is my horse is white. Christine's horse is a chestnut. And then, her junior rider was riding my daughter's horse, who's black, which is probably why they landed all over her. It says to avoid wearing floral or citrus perfumes, lotions, or aftershaves because they are sensitive to odors. And it makes sense. Bees like flowers.
Yeah, that's right.
So it says you should always check your house at least once a month to see if there's any sign of bees taking up residence. I know a friend of mine was given a travel trailer, and she figured out one of the reasons they gave it to her was because it was full of bees.
Great.
No, actually, I don't know that that's true. But I mean, once she got it home, she discovered it was full of bees. And
yeah.
She has yet to figure out
how
to get it.
That wasn't in the sales agreement.
Right. Yeah. Well, and they're honeybees, so she's been hesitant to kill them because, you know, we need all our honeybees, but she hasn't been able to find anyone to come remove the bees.
Yeah, exactly. They're goners.
So it says to fill all your cracks and crevices in the walls with steel wool and caulk to prevent bees from building a colony in your house or your yard. Fill in holes in the ground and remove trash piles, because bees like to nest in old soda cans or overturned flower pots.
Okay, I've told this story before on the air, but the first farm we moved into, it was Jennifer's parents. They had just bought it. It had sat empty for a while, hadn't it, Jennifer, the house, before you guys moved in? Yeah, so we moved in, and there were 4 bedrooms upstairs, and this is a very, very old farmhouse. It didn't even have heat. It had coal heat, and that didn't work very well. So it's a very old farmhouse, and upstairs didn't have heat or anything. And we couldn't figure out why the first summer we were there, the hall in the spare bedroom hummed. And we just couldn't figure that out. One day, we finally got curious enough. I poked a hole in the wall, and all of these wasps started flying out. We got cans and cans of wasp spray, and we just opened up the wall a little bit more, and we just filled the thing with wasp spray. And when we took the plaster off the rest of the wall, we discovered the entire wall was filled with mud wasp nests. They had the entire wall between the rafters was just one big hive. We've had a little experience with wasps moving into your house. Yeah, it was something else.
But the mud daubers typically aren't stinging wasps.
Yeah, but you don't want them in your bedroom.
Well, that's true.
In the wall, it's really creepy to hear your wall humming, let me tell you. It's really creepy.
I can imagine that's true. So it says, be alert for bees that are acting strangely. They will sometimes display preliminary defensive behavior before they attack. It says, when you're outdoors in a rural area, be aware of your surroundings and keep an eye out for bees like you would watch out for snakes or other natural dangers. And I don't like bees, but I typically don't care about them like I would snakes. So I can see where that would
all
be.
All I could picture was the robot lost in space and the little bees going, warning, warning, warning. Yeah, that's
picture. Right? I could see that too. This is, you know, don't swat at the bees because swatting releases an alarm signal and stimulates the other bees to attack. So, you know, you swat at one bee, the whole hive.
Another natural reaction.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And this is don't provoke the bees by spraying the hive with a garden hose. I never thought about that one.
Yeah, no, actually, we've seen that on the America's Funniest Videos. Yeah, it's not a good idea.
It sounds like a really bad idea.
Not a good idea. And you said don't jump in water. I never right. knew that one. Okay.
Yeah, no, don't jump in the water. They'll just be waiting for you when you come up for air. Huh. And then this article goes on to talk about you can get a kit that has like everything you need in it for bee prevention and protection, which I thought was pretty cool because I would never have thought about needing to have, you know, a bee protection kit. But those girls should have used that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, not everybody has Benadryl hanging around either, right? So,
right.
You know, that's something else that you have to think about too. Well, that's interesting and terrifying all at the same time.
Well, and if you know you have a bee allergy, this isn't in the article, but if you know you have a bee allergy, always carry your EpiPen out
right,
on the trail.
Right, yep.
Always.
Yeah. Especially trail riders.
Especially trail riders.
Very good. Well, something we don't think about very often until it happens.
Right.
And then you have to think about it. Well, we had an opportunity to go into our product of the month here. We had an opportunity at Aiden. I've been saving this for your show. Jennifer and Helena of the Stable Scoop show had a chance to speak with a guy who had a product that's perfect for trail riders of all sorts. So let's take a listen. This was done at the American Equestrian Trade Association, the trade show for retailers and wholesalers.
Okay, so I'm going to say this as if this is the first time I'm saying this. All weekend long, we have a new product that I'm like super excited about because it's really cool. We have Kurt with us, and he is going to talk to us about a company called Empower that makes a product line called Lucy. And Lucy has a couple of kids.
It's a whole family.
And
literally.
Essentially, they are solar-powered lights.
Inflatable lanterns,
inflatable
that is correct.
Lanterns.
They okay. come... They come deflated, packaged very small, and you basically pull the nozzles out, you open them up.
Think of a clear beach ball, except it's a cylinder shape.
Correct, with 10 LED lights on it that throw out 60 lumens of light. And the one you're holding right there, that's Lucy Original. Original will cast a light.
Wow, it's very bright. I just put it under our table so we could really see. It's very bright.
It will throw 10 square feet of light.
Okay, so you can read a book by it.
Absolutely. Good for barbecues, good for backyard, great for horse trailers. Your power goes out and you're stuck in a spot that you don't have power, it is completely shatterproof, waterproof.
Horseproof.
Good point. It's not going to break and leave shards of glass or plastic
totally around.
Totally
shatterproof.
Great
absolutely.
For in your living quarters horse trailer.
It's a great source of reusable energy. So 1 hour charge gives you 1 hour of power. And
6 hours of charge?
It'll go 6 hours
for six
of
hours
your
power.
It holds
correct.
Up to 6 hours.
Yeah, it'll hold
okay.
actually all to 12 if you're not on full power. You can go, there's different settings there. So if I'm on a minimal.
It's like a dimmer
like
switch.
A night light setting or something.
Right, it'll come down to like 8 hours or so.
Another great
still.
Use in your luggage, a night light for your hotel room.
Night light.
So Original throws the most light probably. Then we have Lux, which is just this one right here, which is a little softer light, a little easier on the eyes.
That's squished
down. The same cylinder size. The same
size. So you can safely turn them on when they're deflated?
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. That's another great...
Again, great for travel. Don't even have to blow it up.
Well, and if you were like to have a party or something in your backyard, you don't have to have candles either. You don't have to worry about possibly burning your house down.
Liking that.
You know, that's a good thing. So we do, Lux is kind of the softer light, and then this is called EMRG. This is a new product that just came out. And basically what, this works more like a flashlight. It directs the light a little bit more. And then
this
also
is my favorite part.
Has a strobe capability, which goes in SOS. So it strobes for an emergency situation.
Oh.
Which is awesome. You leave them in your car, you leave them in your boat, something. I like it personally in my car. Like if I had a flat tire or something like that, I could actually put it on the side of the road. Not only could I, you know, be letting somebody know I'm in need of help, right. but also, you know, that I'm actually there.
Yeah.
Right.
On the roadside. You can either strobe it or you can just put it on regular light.
Correct. Yeah. Right. It'll go flat.
Or if you're out partying with your friends in town, you can put it on the red strobe and freak out the guy in front of you.
You can do that.
I don't
put it on the dashboard.
You can do that with your
I don't have friends. No. I don't live in town.
And then Aura is kind of the fun one that strobes in multiple colors. So it will go through a cycle of lights, greens, reds, blues, yellows, and so forth. And then we'll actually continue to funnel through those.
That
colors.
One's kind of fun for training. If you're doing desensitization work with your horses, you Could can be. Use those for training. The nice part is, A, you don't have to plug it in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. B, it's shatterproof. So if your horse freaks out and steps on it, so what?
Mm-hmm. Yep. You replace them.
You don't have to put a extension cord anywhere.
Nope.
So for desensitization, or if you're doing the obstacle courses, which so many people like to do now, it's useful for that too. Just turn it upside down so that the very discreet solar panels are up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And waterproof. So if you were actually out in the elements
rain,
too,
no big
yeah,
deal.
You can put them in a pool.
You could put them in a pool. Yeah, I would get a pool just so I could put these in my pool and have a party with them.
It's just a completely sustainable, reusable, functional source of energy.
Yeah, they're fun and they're simple. Yeah. And what are the price points on these?
Okay, so starting with EMRG, retails at $10. Outdoor will be at $15. Lux right here will be at $20. And Lucy Aura will be at $25.
And the Lucy Aura is the one that's got the super cool strobing frosted.
Correct. Yeah, that's a good party
fancy.
One. That's a good fun backyard one.
That's like the bionic one. It can leap a building in a single bound.
Yeah, and exactly. You know, the big point of this brand, too, is that we try and give back, too. So there's a whole element to this where they've donated thousands of these to villages in Africa so kids can read by them. Because they don't have necessarily infrastructure or sustainable energy.
No electricity going to your home.
Tons of sunlight, but they don't necessarily have power.
But they have tons of sunlight, therefore they have tons of power now.
Right, and you really don't need to teach somebody how to use this.
No, they put it out, they power them during the daylight, and at night they can come home and read books and so forth. So esteemed owner Scott Kling is a person who truly believes in giving back to the world and is making the world a better place as a result of his product.
So where's a great place, an easy place for listeners to find these products?
We are in 600 retailers around the United States, and I can actually give you a quick little snapshot, if I can dig it up, of some of the retailers that we currently do business with. And you can go... Amazon.com, Big Five, Camping World, Moose Jaw, Target, Nordstrom's,
so
Sport Chalet.
Mega retailers everywhere.
Yeah, and Eastern
going
Mountain
to ask,
Sports.
What should they ask for? Look for?
You ask for Empowered, but a lot of times people will call it Lucy. They think they're Lucy Lanterns, which is kind of the baby of the thing, and that's fine too.
Lucy Lanterns.
Yeah,
okay,
but Empowered is the brand, so they should ask for Empowered. But any of those great retailers, Lowe's, Ace Hardware.
And if you forget all these names, just call it the blow-up solar-powered lamp.
Inflatable solar-powered lanterns.
Oh, and you get the one that's frosted for the romantic nights in the tent.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and we'll actually be doing seasonal versions of that as well for Halloween with Spooky, which is just coming out. So there'll be skeletons and so forth. And then there'll also be a Christmas version of it where we'll have... ornaments and snowflakes and so forth on it.
It's a blow up solar snow globe. Oh my
gosh! Pretty much, yeah. And as long as there's sun.
I do think though, every horse trailer, living quarters or otherwise, every pickup truck that makes long road trip needs to have the emergency one. It's just so smart.
Yeah, it's a lot of travel, and it's like I said, I leave one in my car, and I leave one in my boat as well.
You said you put it on your dashboard.
Yeah, I got
that way it's charged.
I got some charging on my dashboard as we speak.
Good idea.
Right now. Yeah.
Great idea. Thank you so much, Kurt.
Thanks for
having me. Appreciate it.
Well, there you go. I think you guys could use that.
Definitely. That's pretty useful.
They were a lot of fun because you blow them up, and it was just so cool. I mean, they really did work, too. I was surprised how well they worked.
That would be cool, especially like for my trailer where I don't have any kind of battery-operated lights inside yet, and we're always misplacing the lantern and sometimes they don't have batteries, and that'd be great to have just, because then I could read for a little while before I go to bed. Or,
And you just have to remember to put them outside during the day to charge, you know,
sure.
Just turn them over. They were really neat. It was really a cool idea. And Jennifer, I did find the website. I don't know why he didn't mention his own website name, but M-Powered. It's M-P-O-W-E-R-D. Of course, everything's spelled weird nowadays. So it's mpowerd.com is where you can find their website and with all the different styles and information there. But I just thought that was a great idea for trail riders. And while Jennifer is getting our first guest on, you have a tip of the month.
I do have a tip of the month. This month, I wanted to talk about timing when you're riding in an NATRC ride. I think we've touched on it before, but it's been a while. And we had some new competitors at the last couple rides, and it reminded me that it's simple, but yet a little bit complicated to practice timing the ride points. When we time out for the day, we typically tell people to set their watch on midnight. If you have a dial watch, which is how I prefer to do it, or if you have like a stopwatch, you know, to click start. I like the dial watch because sometimes when you have a stopwatch or a timer, you'll bump it sometime during the day and then you lose your time. And so it can be a little bit hazardous to your timing. But typically if you're riding in a novice competition, you know, if you're brand new, you're going to be going around 4 miles an hour. And so if you set your watch to midnight and then you're going 4 miles an hour, every time you've gone 4 miles, an hour should have gone by. And we give people maps and it has the points, like point A might be a mile. So that's going to be 15 minutes. So you get to point A and it's like, look, I've gone a mile and I'm at 16 minutes. Okay. So I maybe need to go a little bit faster, you know, or I'm okay at 16 minutes. It's not that big a deal. And then I get to point B and maybe I've gone 5 miles. So that should be an hour and 15 minutes. Well, if I get to point B, and my watch is reading an hour and 30 minutes, then I know I'm going a little too slow and I need to speed up. And I had somebody this week said, oh, well, I just looked at my watch and I remember that I timed out at 8:40. And I was like, well, do you really want to do the math on that all day? You don't have to think I timed out at 8:40 and now I've gone 5 miles. So that's an hour and 15 minutes. So now I should be at, you know, it's just a lot of math when you're trying to think about everything else.
Yeah, we had the same problem. We used to do road rallies, and you couldn't do that. It just got too complicated. Just
exactly.
Yeah. While you're trying to think about everything else you're doing, too. Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing. And like now, I have a GPS. And so what I've discovered is I got a GPS after we had Distance Depot on the air a couple months ago. And I bought the one that she recommended. And so now it's like I have my GPS and it tells me, it's because it's that particular model is made for runners or bikers. It tells me what my lap pace is. So I have to still do a little bit of math because it'll tell me that mile was like 16 minutes. But I just kind of keep a mental note. It's like, well, that mile was 16 minutes and I'm at 4 miles an hour, so I need to speed up a little. And it kind of works out over time because with the GPS, it tends to lose a little bit in elevation change. And so I remember in Nebraska last month, I thought, oh, I'm a little bit behind, but then it was a little bit shorter because of the hills. So I ended up being right on time. But, you know, it also has a timer on it. So I have a timer on my Fitbit watch and I have a timer on my GPS. So if one of them quits working, I'm set. I can look at either arm and know what time I'm on.
There you go. Very good. Good piece of advice. And let's now go to our first guest.
All right. Well, our first guest is Jan Lear, and she is a longtime NATRC competitor and volunteer. I met her in January at a competition, and she is very much into this trailer conversion movement that we're seeing a lot. There's a big list on Facebook, a big group on Facebook where people are taking trailers and converting them. Well, Jan's been doing this for years. So welcome, Jan. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good morning to everybody.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and your history with NATRC. And then we talk a little bit about how you got into renovating trailers.
Well, I got my first horse, back in 1990 and needed a trailer. I bought a stock trailer and I learned about Natrek. And that's how I learned to ride, going on the rides, and it was fun. And, you know, I thought you had to buy mini everything, carry it on your horse, and then you went out into the trail and found a place to camp, and then you set up camp, and then you get up the next day and rode. No, that's not how it works. I was very delighted to find out you have camp first and then ride out. And I've enjoyed going out on the trails with my horses. That first horse, I had her up until she was 22 years old. And that first trailer, oh boy, it was a Hanover. I've had 10 trailers in 20 years. Some were new, some were...
It's a bunch of trailers.
Yeah.
I have. That first one had a rotten floor, so I had to put in a new floor. And when you went to sleep in the tiny little dressing room, you got rained on because of the condensation, so I had to put carpet in there. And I know now that's not the correct way to do it, but I made a few different changes. You know, it was metal or steel, and I put magnets up so you could hang things. And I like the physical working on stuff, and it just went from there. I sold that trailer, and then I went into a couple of that was Gooseneck. I went into a couple bumper poles that were new. Now, most of the trailers that I've dealt with have been new, but I've always made changes. I've always improved them and sent them on down the road as my needs changed and my taste. You know, I really like the Goosenecks, but I always made the trailer better before I got rid of it and went to something different.
So, when you started out with this trailer, yes, it was a dressing room. So was it a Gooseneck or was it a bumper pole?
The first one was a Gooseneck. It was a Hanover.
That's okay.
I think it was an 86 model. Very open in the back. In fact, it was a reverse slant where the horses faced the curb. I didn't know any different. I mean, just put the horse in there. But yeah, it was a Gooseneck. Brown, not too pretty, you know, very open. You know, you put your clothes in the back, and by the time you go to get your clothes to change and it rained, they were wet. That was a funny story, but we camped up at Angelina National Forest, and it rained, and everything, I was wearing somebody's clothes that were two sizes too small for me because all mine got soaked. You know, it was an interesting day. But that trailer I had, I kept most of them probably 2 years until I got to my large living quarters trailer, which I kept for 14, and I sold that a year ago to another NATRC lady, and I think you know her.
Yes.
And she's very happy with it. She said she looked at that trailer about 20 times on Horse Trailer World and all the pictures, and she emailed me, and when she came out to get it, she had a check in her hand. She says, I'm taking this home. Okay.
It's a cute trailer. I like it. I like the colors that you did in it. I think it's teal inside, and it's nice.
And the trailer I have now, I've had four stars. That's my favorite brand. I have a 21-year-old trailer now that I'm converting myself. All the others, I did little things, adding plexiglass, new floors, new tires, fixing up the paint. I had a little tube horse bumper pull that I just camped in, bought it for $1,000, fixed it up, sold it for $1,200. This one came completely naked. The dressing room was just unfinished. It had an air conditioner and that was it. And I ripped out all the little bit of wiring that was in there and the, I don't know what you call it, the junction box, the power box, and rewired it and put in the insulation and the walls and framing the windows and putting down the floor. And I'm at a point now where I need to put in cabinets. And I've never built a cabinet in my life, so this ought to be interesting. It's not going to be equipped with plumbing or shower or things like that. It's just going to be something that, when I get rid of it, something that somebody can camp in, sleep in. You know, you can always do the bucket bath or put a cowboy shower in the back. But it'll be a lot nicer than when I got it. It was in good shape. It was kept in a barn, and I put new tires on it. I always check to make sure the floors are good. It's because I'm going to use this. My horses are going to be in there. It has to be safe. The floor has to be good, or it's going to get fixed. if it's a wood floor, new tires, brakes, bearings. When I got this one, I got home and I used twice as much fuel as I normally do pulling a heavier trailer. Well, come to find out, the bearings had never been greased.
You said it's 20 years old. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the gunk in there is supposed to be red and it was black. The guy took a picture of it and showed me. He said, don't take this trailer in it. Well, I already hauled it from Crockett down to Houston. You know? I always want the trailer to be in better condition than when I got it. And so this one, it's been a fun thing. I had a walkthrough door put in. I brought that one up to the last red, well, where we were. I'm drawing a blank on where it was. But it's comfortable. You know, I go out there and I lay in it during the day and look around thinking, what am I going to do next? And the dog comes in, the cat comes in, and we camp.
Like your own private clubhouse.
It is. It's my therapy room because I have one cat that likes to howl all night long. And when the earplugs don't work, I just pick up my radio, or not my radio, my phone, and I go out and I stay in the trailer.
So I get a good night. Do you ever convert for other people, or have you just done it for yourself so far?
I have never done it for others. I've consulted a lot of people. And they've taken me up on quite a few of my suggestions, but I've never done it for money for anyone else. I don't know how that would work out.
I understand.
You know, you want them to be happy, but if they're not, I'm not really in the business of being a conversion company. I've done all my own wiring. I'm not worried about that, but I always take it down to my trailer shop, and it's okay. Make sure I'm legal. And then I bring it home and I go on to the next portion of what I'm doing. But I have many, many times people have come to me and said, hey, somebody said you know what you're talking about. So what can I do with this trailer? How can I improve it? Can I do this? Can I do that? And, you know, I'll do sewing for people and that sort of thing if they want curtains and whatever. But I hadn't thought about doing it for others.
So what has been the hardest thing that you have done? Like in this project or in other projects that you've done yourself, what has been the most difficult part of the conversion?
The difficult part? I wouldn't say that any of it's really difficult. It's just, it's in time intensive. It's a learning curve. Putting in the insulation wasn't difficult. Drilling holes, that was interesting because you have to drill a pilot hole and then you have to use your self-tapping screws. And they don't have to be real long because you get one or two revolutions of that screw into that aluminum and it grabs. And then you're working overhead. The wiring, probably knowing where you want it, what to do, that's something you have to lay out ahead of time. I think the most difficult for me now is going to be the cabinets because I don't know exactly what I want and I've never built a cabinet. I've built boxes. They haven't been pretty. I don't want those in my trailer.
Have you thought about just getting cabinets from like Home Depot or something and then making them fit? Or?
Well, I have, but I'm fussy. And if I put in one set of cabinets and I can't get any more and I want a cabinet over here, I want the doors to match. So I've talked to some people about framing, face framing, and doing the pocket jigs and making the little holes so you don't have any screws showing, or building a frame out of 2x2s and using 3/8-inch plywood, you know, birch finished plywood, something pretty, staining it or painting it. There's so many different directions you can go in. I just haven't decided yet what I'm going to do.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's.
I know there's a company down in, Jennifer said, in Miami that there's a couple companies popping up now that do commercial trailer rehab, and they take these really old Bad's Craigslist trailers like we usually find, and mm-hmm. they'll convert them, and they look like kind of retro trailers, totally, you know, souped up,
right.
Which are really cool. They're really cool looking. We have a trailer right now you can do. I'll just bring it over, okay?
I'm home all day.
All right, good. Yeah, if you could just take care of that for us, that'd be great. Need some updating.
Yeah, the bumper pulls that I've had have been steel, and it's, I've always added the magnets. I always look for storage. Looking up, I put shelves in. I had a Shelby trailer that had a pointed nose. I had shelves all across the top. Everything was stuffed up there, held up with bungee cords. It was up and out of the way, and then the dog and I slept on the floor. Another one that I made money on.
What kind of renovations do you like to do to bumper pulls? Because I know until January when I bought my gooseneck, I had thought about renovating my bumper pull, but I could never quite figure out what needed to happen.
Well, it's really not any different. If you want to close it in, you put the insulation up and you close in with the furring strips and you put your walls up, and it really depends on how much room you have. Put in a bench. Are you going to make a bed area? Do you want a sink? Do you want a microwave? Carpet on the floor? How do you want to finish it out?
I mean, how much space do you need to do a bumper pull? I mean, what can you put? I mean, how big a dressing room would you need to do that?
Well, they're all shaped so funny. Some are pointed and some are rounded. You would need, from the tip of the front where it hooks onto the hitch back, you'd probably need 5 or 6 feet to have something to move around in. And, of course, you've got the slant wall that you have to deal with. It's always nice to have a walk-through. Even in a steel trailer, you can have a walk-through door put in, and that opens up to the back, and you can maybe put in, the little two-horse that I had. I had a hammock on one side, and I had a bucket with a shower curtain around it on the other side. That was my bathroom and my bedroom. It depends on what the trailer looks like. It's pretty hard to say without seeing it.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much, Jan. Can people email you or find you on Facebook, or if they have questions about other,
They can find me on Facebook. Apparently, there's a lot of Jan Lears out there, so it's jan.lear.10 on Facebook. Or they can email me at jkz861@att.net, and I can answer questions for them.
That would be great. Thank you so much.
All right, Alice. Thank you.
Bye, Jan. Well, there's a lady who just takes it on herself to get it done.
That's right.
Get her done. She had to be from the South.
Yes. Yeah, she lives near Houston. Yes.
Exactly. Well, that's terrific. And I really do want to bring my trailer down to this one in Miami, because they really do give them super paint jobs and spiffy them up. I don't know if there's a whole lot of other people around the country that do that. But I would think that there would be a need for it. There's sure plenty of old crappy trailers out there that need fixed up.
That's true.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break for a song for today. And I have Marianne Kennedy with Born to Ride. And we're going to be back with more show for you in just a couple of minutes.
First word that I ever said, visions of galloping in my head, manes flowing, tails held high. I knew that I was born to ride. I was born to ride, like a bird was born to fly. Fish gotta swim, sun's gotta shine. Love me, love my horse, 'cause that's the way I'm gonna spend my life. 'Cause I was born to ride, born to ride, born to ride. like the air I breathe. The way they move is poetry. Oh, never I grew them and I never will. On the day I die, I'll be loving them still. Cause I was born to ride. Like a bird was born to fly. Fish gotta swim, sun's gotta shine. Love me. Love my horse. Of a horse. Love me, love my horse. That's the way I'm gonna spend my life. Cause I was born to ride, born to ride. I was born to ride.
Kennedy with Born to Ride. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here, and I am with Alice. And of course, it is the NATRC Trail Ride Day here on Horses in the Morning. Coach Jen is in the producer chair. And I wanted to remind everybody that tomorrow's really bad ads day. You want to get your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. We have a terrific prize for you tomorrow. We'll be giving away one of our guests from yesterday's books called The Essential Fergus. Of course, everybody knows the cartoon character Fergus. Well, that was the whole book coming out, I think, in a week or two. And we are going to be giving away a copy of that to the winner of tomorrow's Really Bad Ads. So get your ads in today to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Well, we are ready for our next guest. If Alice ready for our next guest? Alice, are you there?
Yes, I'm okay. Sorry. I put myself on mute.
Yeah, I figured that's what happened.
I thought I had unmuted.
You were over there talking to yourself.
I was. Yeah. That's not an unusual occurrence.
I read yesterday that people that talk to themselves are the most intelligent and the most creative. So there you go.
There you go. Yeah. I knew there was a good excuse.
And the last line said, or crazy. But I just don't know. I'm just kidding.
Great.
All right, let's get to our next guest.
All right. Our next guest is Jeff Sims, who is founder of Trail Guard. And Jeff is a new acquaintance of mine. I don't know him very well, so I'm going to let him introduce himself a little further. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having us.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I grew up around Fort Worth, Texas, and I come from a long line of horse trainers and rodeo athletes, and my father, most of my life, was a cutting horse trainer and still is, and I started training cutting horses back in the late 80s and rodeoed all through high school and showed cutting horses and pleasure horses and halter horses and just about anything you could do with a horse. I tried to find a way to do it, and I've got a son that's now training cutting horses as well. So it's in our family, in our blood, and what we do. And so we have, again, you know, lived around the Fort Worth area all of my life, and sort of thing. And I've got a sister that's a Hall of Famer and has a huge breeding program. And so, again, we're just a family of horse people that, you know, this has been our life and our existence, all of my life at least. So,
how did you come to start Trail Guard?
Well, back in the 90s, I was hauling for the world, and I was traveling out in West Texas. I was between Abilene and Sweetwater, and headed to a show, and had almost a brand new truck, brand new trailer. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, I found myself broken down. It was the middle of winter, and it was sleeting. I had five horses and a five-year-old son, and no one to call. And it was a disaster. We were stuck down the side of the road. Like I said, it was, you know, freezing cold, sleeting. The truck wouldn't start, wouldn't run. And so we had no heat. We didn't have anything, you know, and this is in a time before cell phones. So it was a bad situation. And finally, somebody came along and helped us out and gave us a ride. And, you know, it took a couple of days and a couple of bus rides back to Abilene and everything. And, you know, the people where we were staying at the hotel were kind enough to lend us their vehicle to get around and get to the barn to get somebody to get our horses picked up off the side of the road. You know, I just thought there's got to be a better way. But at the time, there wasn't. And so a short time later, I had a real good friend of mine coming home from the Midwest and found themselves in the same situation. And they were able to get in touch with me, and I went and got them and their trailer and their animals, you know. And I was like, there's really a need for this. And so I went to work kind of developing the network of people that we could call and use, and, you know, anything from boarding facilities to towing facilities to people that could go get a trailer full of horses, because that's a complex issue. You know, anybody can call a tow company to go get a stranded vehicle, but picking up a trailer full of horses is a far different situation, especially, you know, like a gooseneck trailer. It's not on every corner that you can find somebody that has capabilities to go pick something like that up. And so we started developing the network and worked many years on that. And in about 2008, we started enrolling people just on a, you know, invitation only basis, not really making it a business yet, just really perfecting the network and making sure this is something that was feasible and doable. And we put a lot of time into it and into developing it. And, you know, again, just making sure that we could deliver what we wanted to offer. And, you know, after doing that for a few years, and we started, you know, kind of ramping up the enrollment and gradually, and continue even today to still develop and build that network of people we can call, you know, of it, all times of day or night, especially in these rural and remote areas where, you know, people seem to find themselves stranded, you know, late at night or on weekends or holidays and things like that.
Now, you have one big competitor in this market that everybody's heard of. What makes you different than them?
Well, a few things. We don't really consider ourselves as a competitor to anybody. We just feel like we're a more comprehensive program. Our focus is, if somebody is stranded, we try to make sure they get to where they're going. Still, you know, you've got a lot of horse people that are, you know, hauling for points, year end awards, and standings, and things of that nature. So our focus isn't just getting people off the road and getting them, you know, to a safe place to wait for their vehicle to be repaired. We come in and we take over, and we continue to get our members onto their event.
Okay? That's a big difference. Huge difference, actually. Yeah.
Right. And again, you know, I was a horse trainer, so I understand whenever you've got a trailer full of horses that you've been hauling all year to try to, you know, earn a world title or something like that, I understand how important it is that you make these events to maintain your standings. And not only that, you've got these trainers that may be hauling 10 or 12 horses. Well, their owners have invested all this money in entry fees and everything. So, you know, a trainer could potentially be out thousands of dollars, you know, in entry fees and, you know, standings and whatnot, year-end awards and titles, you know. And so, again, you know, our focus isn't just getting them the help they need. It's getting them where they need to be. And that, excuse me, that's one of the biggest things that sets us apart, I think, is, again, that focus on, you know, the trainer, the people that are hauling, or even if it's just a weekender, you know, you've got folks that love to go on endurance rides and trail rides, and they may only do two or three a year, but they may spend their year planning their year around these events. And it's just as important to them to make sure they get to these events as it is, you know, a trainer or anybody else.
And you know what? It doesn't matter whether you're going to a little local event or you're going to the World Championships. It just sucks when something happens and you break down on the way. You still have the same problems. It doesn't matter where you're going, right? It's the same
issue. Exactly.
So now, let me ask you. So what happens is I'm driving my truck. I'm on Way Show and I break down. I'm pulled alongside the highway. I call you guys. Do I get a customer service person that then takes over? How's the process work?
All of our calls are handled in-house. They're not routed through a call center.
No, India? Like I'm not that. Going into India?
No, you're not going through India, okay. Or Canada, or anywhere else. You're coming straight into our call center here, local in the United States, with English-speaking operators. But, again, they're not operators. All of our team members have hauled horses, either rodeoed, shown, or in some capacity have been involved in the horse or livestock industry, and have every one of them has hauled and is familiar. They know the questions to ask. What size ball do you have? What type of vehicle do you need? What kind of coupler does your trailer have? All these questions, all of our people, that's our biggest investment we make, is in our people. And whenever somebody calls, you know, if they're broken down, they don't need just a tow. They need somebody to come get that trailer. They might need a boarding facility for those horses or livestock. And so we go to work on it as a team. And instead of putting one person on it trying to deal with this and then this and then this, you got a team of people trying to work everything out simultaneously and make it all happen at the same time to expedite the service and get everything, you know, rolling and make it go much smoother and faster.
Wow, that's really neat. I mean, that's very comprehensive compared to other situations I've been in before where all I needed was a tire change and I couldn't get help with that.
Right.
So you have recently become a sponsor of NATRC. And I know that a lot of people are probably wondering, like, what is the cost of this service? I mean, it sounds fantastic. So how can we participate?
The cost of the service, we have three levels of service. We have a one-year membership that runs $360 a year, so less than a dollar a day. We have a five-year program where if a member wishes to, they can pay for 4 years, and they receive the fifth year free. And then we have a lifetime membership where they just make a one-time payment and never have a payment again. They're covered for life. And one of the other things I'd like to point out about our program, especially, again, whenever it comes to trainers and everything, and I'm not personally aware of any other program that will cover a trainer or anybody that hauls horses to events full time, is with our program, whenever a member enrolls, it's not just the member, it's their spouse, their dependent children, and anybody else that works for them or is using their vehicle or their trailer. So our members know that regardless of where they're at or who's using their truck or their trailer, that it's going to be taken care of. And they can call up regardless of who's in it, give us a membership number, and it's taken care of. And again, they're covered, our members, not only in their vehicles, but any vehicle that they're riding in or driving. So
that's a big thing too. Where is it? Anywhere in the United States?
Right. Anywhere in the lower 48 United States.
Okay.
And again, you know, there's no need. They don't have to worry about calling and adding somebody to their membership or paying an additional fee if they have a driver or anything like that that works for them, or if they just have a friend that's going to take the trailer somewhere, you know, that we eliminate that headache. Or, you know, they don't have to call and say, oh, by the way, we got a new vehicle. Take this one off and put that one on. It's, they're covered no matter what.
Okay. So, very
that
cool.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's trying to keep it simple, you know. And again, you know, we know a lot of trainers and people have folks that drive for them or that help them drive or what have you, you know. And so, again, we just try to give them the most comprehensive coverage regardless of the situation and without them having to call and say, oh, you know, we're going to be riding with somebody or somebody's going to be driving for us or what have you. You know, anything that they own is covered and anything that they drive or ride in is covered. So,
hey, that's only two tanks of gas in one of these trucks anyway. So, right?
Exactly.
When you think about it that way, you know, you might think, oh, that sounds like a lot of money until you think it costs you $200 to fill up one of these trucks anyway. So it's literally two tanks of gas.
Well, and again, the distance that we go, you know, we don't have mileage limits. We guarantee our members that if they break down, and, you know, people today are investing, you know, $85,000 to $185,000 in tow vehicles alone. And so we guarantee them, regardless of where they're stuck, we're gonna haul that vehicle as far as we have to, but no expense to them, to get it to a manufacturer's warranty provider, which in most cases it's a dealership, unless you get into the Peterbilts and Freightliners. Now they do have factory authorized warranty repair centers that are not necessarily a dealership, but we guarantee these people that, hey, you don't have to go to the little $8 an hour mechanic that changes oil for a living down here on the corner because it's the closest. We're going to get people where they know they're going to get reputable, warrantable repairs. And we're going to take that trailer as far as we have to get them to their event, their boarding facility, or back home with no out-of-pocket expenses. And so it's something, you know, that you hope you never have to use, but if you use it one time, you're going to more than pay for it.
Wow, this is great. So, I mean, I'd never heard of it. I'm glad that you're on today because I had never heard of it.
Well,
it's a great idea.
Thank you so
much. And, you know, there's a lot of these people, eventers and dressagers, you know, no matter, not just Western sports, but English sports that are on the road all the time. I mean, they're just on the road all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we see it every day, you know, I mean, people from all walks of life, you know, whether it's, like you said, the English riders, the endurance riders, Western riders, what have you, you know, everybody has a need for it if they're walking out the door and leaving with an animal. And so, you know, again, we do everything we can to exceed our members' needs. And, you know, if somebody go to our Facebook page or our website and look at the reviews, you know, we really understand the emotions and the aggravation and the situation that people are in when they're stuck, especially with a trailer and animals. And so, again, we try to do everything we can as fast as we can to take any burden, expense, anything off of them. And, you know, it's never a good situation when you're stuck, but in most cases we can make people smile and make them very glad that, you know, they took part in our program, and we're just really proud of what we do because we're really passionate about it. And it's a great feeling to get up and help people every day. You know, unfortunately, you never want to see anybody in a situation that they need the help. But again, if they're in that situation, it's just great to be able to, you know, ease the burden and make it better.
Well, thank you so much for being on today, Jeff.
Thank you for having us.
No, I appreciate it. And we look forward to our continued sponsorship with NATRC. Please tell us how we can get a hold of you again with the website. Make sure I have it right in here.
All right. You can visit us online at www.trailguard.org. Or anybody can call toll free at 844-404-8273.
All right. Thank you again.
Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. You guys have a wonderful day.
You know, I knew about the other one. I didn't know about this one.
Right.
You know, because you've seen the other one advertising everywhere. But I think he's right. I don't know that they help you get your horses to where they need to go. They just help you get safe. So this is a really unique concept. What a great idea.
Yes, it's going to be, it's really nice to have them as sponsors, and it'll be great to have.
Well, you know, and it's a pain in the neck when you're along the road trying to figure this stuff out. They can figure it out sitting in a nice office in front of a computer for you, you know, while you're there panicking alongside the road.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you each have your own job. You panic, they fix.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's good. And you know, the price, it might seem a little bit high when you first think about it, but you know, but then when you realize that the tow truck is going to cost you that the first time you break down, and then you still got your horses to deal with. So, you know.
And a lot of places won't come help you if you have horses anyway. Like,
right.
Very first time I ever broke down with a horse, I had a flat tire and I had AAA, and they were just like, oh, sorry, no.
Right, because you have a trailer on
right.
board. Yep, that's right. Well, very good guest today. Thank you so much for putting this together. Where can people find out about the rides coming up and everything happening over at the NATRC?
They can find out at www.natrc.org.
Very good. And of course, you can find all of the past episodes of the Trail Ride Show here. Just go to horsesinthemorning.com and search for NATRC. It'll pull up all the past episodes that we've done over the periods of time. And you can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. You can also listen to the recorded version of the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network app. It's free. It's easy. Just go to iOS or Android App Store on your phone or tablet and search for Horse Radio Network. It pulls up all eight of the different shows that we do, and it is the simplest way to listen to the show. We've had over 22,000 people now download the app, and that number is growing every day, so we hope you join us. That's it for this week. We want to thank Trail Guard and, of course, the North American Trail Ride Conference for sponsoring today's show, and we'll see you again next month, Alice.
Yes, we will.
All right, take care, everybody. Talk to you again tomorrow here on Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m.